Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create.
These ideas come from Rebecca's best-selling book, Rhythms of Renewal, Trading Stress and Anxiety for a Life of Peace and Purpose. So grab your copy, invite your friends, and let's live in rhythm.
Welcome back. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe.
And we are into fall, aren't we? It's August, but
it feels like fall.
For us, it's fall.
It's a hot fall, but we're into fall. And this is our last episode of our marriage and parenting series brought to you by RO. And it's just been great to have these conversations all summer. And so many of you, thank you for your feedback along the way. I know we've just heard from so many of you the encouragement, the new conversations it sparked between you and your kids. You and your spouse, just really encouraging to know you guys are out there working on your marriages the way we are. And that's an encouraging thing to hear.
And if you are just tuning in, maybe somebody sent you a link to this podcast and you're like, what's the series? I want to go listen back. If you want to get a recap of the whole series, just go to RebeccaLyons.com. And at the bottom, you can subscribe and just be added to my email list. And this week, we're sending out a recap of all the episodes. And that way, you can go directly to each one, know what they were about, everything from fostering closeness in family, helping a loved one, a spouse that's struggling with anxiety or something with mental health, how to launch your kids well. I mean, just the topics were so good for us personally. It's free counseling. That's what I'm saying. This is free marriage counseling for the last 10 weeks. So if you missed them and you want to catch up, just go subscribe at my website and you will get all the information there.
Well, this summer, you've heard us talk about our marriage retreats that we do. We have a Rhythms retreat coming up at Lost Valley Ranch, October 21 to 24. And we decided, since this is our final episode of the season, we're going to give away a spot to a couple to come join us and be a part of it. And anytime we've done this in the past, it's always been so cool to see how God kind of knew what couple needed this that maybe couldn't have afforded to do it. But through being a part of this giveaway, they were able to kind of receive this gift and how much that brought to them.
So to enter to win, go to RebeccaLyons.com/giveaway, sign up with your name and email, and we will announce the winner August 17th. We'll announce it on social media, so if you want to give us your handle, and we'll also announce it to you via email.
Well, Rebecca, this has been a big week. I mean, our kids just went off to school again, right? Cade's final year.
I know. First day of his last year.
I know. It's his first day of his last year. So we got the pictures, him getting on the school bus. I mean, he's 21 years old. So he gets an extra 4 years in the special ed department. That's part of how our county does the school system, is he gets all this job transition training. It's been wonderful. Yeah. He loves going. He was excited this morning. But it's one of those things for us, too, that's kind of sad, because a lot of times for special needs parents, they talk about, man, you get through that 22nd year and they drop off the cliff. Like, there's not as many social activities, ways for them to get involved. Fortunately, in our county, there's so many opportunities for him. So we're feeling excited about that, but also praying that God helps present us with the right opportunities for him.
And for special needs parents who are out there, who kids do age out of school, you know, you have to get ahead of it. And so we have been planning and preparing for a few years, but no, obviously it's all in God's hands, exactly what Kate will be doing a year from now. But we are so grateful to live in an area that's giving us some options. This is Joy's first day of third grade. And this is Kennedy's first week of her senior year. So this definitely feels like, for Kate and Kennedy, they are both going to be done under our, well, Kate will still be around, but like, it's the end of an era for them. As you know, we went through this last year with Pierce, and we're sending him off for his freshman or sophomore year at college this Friday. So there's a lot shifting in our home. It's been loud and rowdy for a couple months, which makes me kind of consider, as we shift seasons, while it's not fall till September, we know that, it still feels like a shifting of a season for Gabe and I. And I'll just say, for me, this summer season, reflecting, because every season turn, I want to reflect on what the season was and what I anticipate for the new one. And I would say for the summer, it was diligent because I had to write a book. So that was like one wild extreme, but also really playful when the kids were home, like from their work or camps or things like that. And so it was very intentional. Like every moment mattered, whether it was play or work, head down. And so I still feel like we got some reprieve, but with six humans, five of them being adults largely under our roof, it does feel like a lot of energy under our roof.
Yeah, and I'm sure many parents feel that reprieve when school gets back in and you start to get some semblance of a rhythm back, and that's happening for us. I'll also let you know, as this is our last episode of this series, that we are already gearing up for our fall series, and I am really excited about it. We're going to dive into emotional health, and we're going to be talking about the eight feelings that God's given us as a way to point us towards relationship. And so many of these feelings, I know for me, I had a hard time appreciating these feelings. It was feelings of anger, of shame, of guilt, of sadness, of gladness, right? There's all these feelings, and sometimes it gets confusing for us to process, what am I feeling? And we call it anxiety many times. And we talk to the younger generation today, and you ask them how they're feeling, and they go anxious. And yet what they might be feeling is loneliness or guilt or sadness. So this fall season, I'm just giving you, we're going to take a few weeks off, and then we're going to come back in September and kick off this 10-week season. And I think you just want to be a part of that with us, because I think your kids would appreciate it, your teens, you and your spouse. It's going to go deeper into these marriage conversations we've been having all summer, and it's going to be the perfect way for you and your spouse or you and your kids to have a conversation about the value of feelings and why God's given them to us, and why we shouldn't run from them, but we should really engage them to ask deeper questions about why we're feeling it.
Anyone can listen. We don't want you to feel like this is just feelings in relation to your family or your spouse, but anyone can listen, because these eight emotions are dominant, and it's nice to kind of have them in a bucket so we know this is anger. We can recognize it. We know what it is. We know what God says about it, and we know what to do with it. And so the goal is to equip you with each emotion as it comes through. And I think taking a deeper dive on each one is going to help equip us, all of us, in every relationship, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, and we're gonna have an expert with us, a counselor who wrote the book on it, named Dr. Chip Dodd. And many of you've read his books and maybe heard of his work. And Dr. Chip Dodd has done such a brilliant job of helping us think through these feelings. And he's agreed to be a part of those episodes with us, so we can together go deeper into hearing from an expert about these feelings and why we don't run from them, why we embrace them. And so I can't wait for you to be a part of that conversation, that learning for all of us coming this fall.
Speaking of feelings, Gabe, what are you feeling now that summer is closing and we are back in structure?
I'm feeling gladness, which is the one of the eight feelings that many people would say is positive, and the other ones are negative emotions. That's not true. We're going to find out why. But yeah, there's certainly a sense of gratefulness, gladness, excitement about this new season and this year kicking off. I mean, for us, the school year almost represents starting a new year. It's kind of like January for a lot of people. I feel like for us, it's like August is like January. It's like a new year.
Fresh start.
A lot of initiatives going on with our organizations, with the different things that we're committing to and doing, and new rhythms we're incorporating. So I'm feeling gladness. How about you?
I am too. I mean, I feel a little like a 10% sadness because Pierce is leaving, and that's always bittersweet for sure. But 90% gladness for some structure. I always love a new season. I'm always all about it. And I think cooler weather will be nice too. Most of you are wrapping up your summer with vacation season, and it's been so nice to unplug and disconnect. But when you get back home, you are right back in the same routine. RO helps you bring vacation right back to your home.
I know, I love vacation because we literally unplug and you're like, how can I live this way every day? And then you get back in the routine and it's hard. But what I love about RO is it's a tech-packed smart box. I mean, this thing is beautiful. It's a visual cue every day when we walk through our home to spend a few minutes putting our phone down, pairing it with the app, and then that measures the time that we spend away from your phone. It's kind of the opposite of screen time, which shows you how much time you've been on your phone. RO shows us how much time we've intentionally been away from our phone.
So you can really be present and connect. When you change your relationship with your phone, you change your relationships with everyone around you. Gabe and I have noticed this in our marriage and definitely in our parenting. So Aro is all about a little less phone and way more life.
So as an RFL listener, you get $25 discount when you use code RFL at checkout to buy your own Aro Tech Packed Smart Box. And when you check out, you also get a free 6-month subscription for a limited time. So order your Aro today at goaro.com. That's GOARO.com and use the promo code RFL.
Until August 31, Aro is offering the chance to win a 3-night getaway to Bolt Farm Treehouse.
That place is cool.
Yeah, so you could even get one more vacation squeezed in. A luxury mountaintop retreat that, just like Aro, helps people reconnect with nature, their people, and their purpose. So to register for a chance to win, text RFL to 66866. Again, that's RFL at 66866.
Well, in this episode, we're excited to introduce you to Gary Thomas. He's a great author, but somebody who's written specifically in this final episode about marriage and the idea of we're all going to face struggle in our marriage. Sometimes it's an illness, right? Or a cancer or some disaster, job loss, financial burdens, all these things, they come at us and they come at us in our marriage and we don't always know how to handle them. And part of what Gary and I are going to talk about today with Rebecca is this conversation around how do you help strengthen your marriage so you're ready for those storms? What's the prep work you have to do on a daily, weekly basis that helps you be prepared to engage that? And so let's listen into the conversation with Gary Thomas, the author of Making Your Marriage a Fortress, Strengthening Your Marriage to Withstand Life Storms. Let's listen in now.
Welcome to the podcast, Gary.
Thank you. So thrilled to be here.
Yeah, Gary, it's great to have you with us and continue these conversations around marriage. And I know this has been a focus for you, and we're so thrilled to always talk to somebody who's thought deeply about marriage. And I think for Rebecca and I, some of what we were so drawn to in the way that you approach it is dealing with the crisis moments that so many marriages experience.
Right.
Many times they're never prepared for it, right? And it feels like part of your mission is to help prepare people, to just say, look, this is normal. These things are going to come. When they do come, you can be more ready than most people are. So I just want to start by asking you, how did you decide to get into this specific area of helping people with marriage, and why is it so personally motivating and rewarding for you?
I just think there's nothing like marriage that is not to downplay singles and the glory of that life. The Apostle Paul and Jesus were singles. I would be a fool if I downplayed that. But for me, as far as getting to know someone, growing, understanding the Lord, being challenged, there's been nothing like marriage. And so it really was sort of near the start of my career. And this last one is just trying to prepare couples, because what you said is true. Challenges, severe challenges are going to come. I don't know any couple that hasn't been married 25 or 30 years that can't point to some real heavy challenges. It's just when it doesn't happen the first 5 years or the 10 years or 15 years, we can be lulled to sleep.
Right. That's absolutely true. We are in our 25th year this year, and we actually had challenges pretty early on, so it kind of became normal. But you're right. I think there can be some shame attached to those challenges when they come, like, did I do something, or did you do something, or did we do something, or just not always making sense of that trial or that suffering, and sometimes letting that bury you a little bit. And I love how you're proactively approaching this topic about how to build a fortified life, a fortified marriage, so that when we read scripture that says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. It's this reminder, of course, like that's just part of the Christian life, that we share in his sufferings and we share in the resurrection. And I think sometimes we overlook that in the church in particular, that it's all just going to be great. And so thank you for normalizing this conversation for starters, because when you remove the stigma or the shame attached to some hardship, then it helps people feel more seen and known and understood in this place and less alone as they navigate it.
When we had first moved to Houston, you know, we're right, it's Hurricane City. Everybody knows hurricanes come through here. But for the first 7 years, we kept hearing about it and it never happened, especially coming from the Pacific Northwest. The storms just didn't seem that bad. And so when the big one really came, Harvey, it was like people had warned us and we thought it would just be the same because they all just, and so we didn't prepare, we didn't have the supplies. And then you realize why people took it so seriously. I mean, we had water coming up to our door. Now, it never got in, but I remember it was just pathetic. I'm trying to stop up the door with painter's tape and cardboard, which is sort of trying to fight somebody with Kleenex or something. I mean, it's just absolutely worthless. It just makes a mess. And I realize, okay, this is why they take it seriously, because there might be six false alarms, but the seventh one can be really, really bad. And I think that's for marriage, that story that really moved me, that kind of put the idea of this book in my mind, was a man who admitted he had had a serious sexual addiction. And I think through God's work, it had been exposed. 18 months after he'd been in recovery, his daughter came down with leukemia. And he told me, he goes, "We wouldn't have survived if I hadn't have dealt with that addiction. Because I was able to keep things going if everything was fine in our family, but my wife needed me, my daughter needed me. I needed to focus on my family, not on my addiction." He goes, "I wouldn't have been free to give myself to them." And so I want to tell men and women, you may be able to keep your marriage together if materialism is driving you, if lust is driving you, if selfish ambition is driving you. But when the storm hits, it's an entirely different situation. So we want to get healthy and grounded in the Lord and close to each other, because then when the storm does hit, it actually draws us together instead of ripping our family apart.
Yeah, so helpful. And for those listening, I know you write about detecting the signals. Like, what are the warning signals that people should be aware of in their relationship or in their family that help them get some early detection going that a crisis is looming, that something bigger could be happening, not to just ignore it? Could you give us a few examples of that?
Yeah, in this book, the focus is really on intention and connection. Do you feel like there's a connection? Are you living two separate worlds? Do you know what your spouse's biggest temptation is right now? Or are you really clueless? There's several stories of people who have gone through recovery, and the ones who have gone through recovery and made it, what they love is they say, "We know each other like we never knew each other before." And the challenge for me as a pastor is, how do I help couples who haven't gone through addiction? Because addiction is terrible. I mean, addiction destroys a marriage. I mentioned in my Cherish book, you can't cherish your spouse if you cherish an addiction. An addiction sucks up all the oxygen you have that you should be giving to your spouse. So I recognize how awful addiction is. But when people are exposed or they come clean and then they work through recovery, it's amazing to me the new level of honesty that gives them an entirely different kind of marriage. So it's like, how do we help people to become aware of their tendencies and their failings and each other without having to go through the awful valley of addiction, but then getting the benefits of those who go through recovery? So connection is a big one. Do we feel like we're drawing closer? Or are we just sort of skimming and feeling so distant from each other?
Right. Well, and I think that's kind of the root of sin separates, right? So that thing that is hidden creates a barrier between, some gap between that spouse. You know, this is supposed to be, we're supposed to be one as one flesh. And when we do that, we're kind of consecrating and covenanting that we will not withhold anything from one another. And yet that's so scary, right? Like, you mean that, you know, in those honeymoons, you know, that stage, that early year. But then there's these slow, like, simmering kind of things that start to feel hurts. And then you don't really want to share it because you feel like it might be needy or whatever. And I just know for us in those first few years, I didn't want to be the one that was seen as, like, always dependent. I don't know, maybe it was my independent streak. I just didn't want to look too desperate to Gabe. So I would try to, like, you know, be enough on my own, and realizing that even that, trying to prove to him that I could kind of hang maybe with his pace or his perspective or whatever, only kind of started to make me feel more withdrawn or smaller, like maybe my faith wasn't as strong as his. And but just feeling the permission, honestly, to voice that. I think, like, we never intend in marriage to go, like, we're gonna have some secret thing or some hidden thing or something we're just not willing to share. But it's honestly the fear of rejection. Is that what you have found? The fear of rejection of that we would maybe confess some version of a coping mechanism. You're calling it addiction. It is addiction when it gets out of hand, but it might just start with like, hey, I'm just going to kind of numb out right now and escape with some Netflix shows and, you know, avoid hard conversations because I don't like the way they make me feel. But partly I think that's due to marriages that begin to try to confide in one another, and they might feel like the other person either tries to fix them or judge them or reject maybe even that vulnerability. What do you see is a barrier to that kind of connection or vulnerability?
Well, I think what you mentioned, fear, is a huge one. There's a story of a woman who had an affair, and she was just convinced, if I share this, my marriage is over. And it almost was. It was a tough road to get back. The guys who had problems said the same things. If she knew who I really was, she wouldn't be there for me. And we have this really twisted psychological bent that comes out of our fallenness. I saw it with several couples where they think, okay, they're going to find out who I really am and they're going to leave me. So I'm just going to go ahead and make it so outrageous. We just get it over with. And that's where the grace of Jesus Christ, forgiveness and love and acceptance can be so healing. So we've got to guard against that internal stuff. And one of the things that came out is that for your marriage to be a fortress, you need two strong people. If one is deep into the word and worship and prayer, and they're living with the joy of the Lord and peace, and the other one isn't, that is a real weak link in the house, because you want connection, but at times we found each partner has to be strong. There was a couple that lost, catch this, Rebecca, not just their child, but their only child that have trouble connecting. He died when he was 19, almost 20. And one of the first things she said to her friends, look, this rips 70% of couples apart. Please don't let this happen. I've lost my son. I don't want to lose my husband. And she mentioned how for the first year, her husband was the strength. He held her up. She was just devastated, as you could imagine. But it was the second year where he started to fall apart. He'd been strong for her, and now she had to be the strong one. And she says, you know what? That's real life in marriage. It's not 50-50. Sometimes she goes, I feel like for a while, Joe carried 90% of the relationship. Then when he started to get weak, I'm carrying 90% of the relationship. That's the way to, that's why you both want to be strong as individuals so that you can connect and be strong as a couple.
Yeah.
That's the internal, but it's also being aware, Rebecca and Gabe, of the external threat. Had a couple where they have an adult daughter with mental issues, borderline personality disorder, and people with BPD love to split people. They love to put people against each other. And their wall of defense is, they've both said to her, you will not split us. I just want you to know, you can talk this way or that. We're not going to let you split us. And I think that's the attitude we have. We won't let this financial situation, I might be frustrated with you that you didn't, you know, that you spent this, you didn't tell me how bad it was. I might be frustrated that you had this going on the side. I might be frustrated that, but this will not split us. We won't let a child, we won't let deprivation, we won't let this illness. Talk to a couple with MS and they made that same determination. Okay, it's a lot of really bad stuff facing this. But how does it draw us closer together? Raising a mentally challenged daughter, going through a serious illness, going through financial deprivation, how can that draw us closer together instead of rip us apart so that the marriage is part of the solution instead of adding to the pain and the problem?
And I think part of our goal today is help people understand what are some of the rhythms they can be practicing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis that helps build that strength into their marriage and into that connection so that when the crisis comes, they know how to engage it. Are there some rhythms, or I don't know, maybe it's too far to call them rules, but some ways in which you would say for marriage is like a way to build a fortress, because that's what you've written about, is like a fortress that's protected against really the enemy. And we know there's a spiritual enemy that loves nothing more than to cause crisis in marriage and to divide through sin, through selfishness, and all of the above. But what are some practical ways you'd advise couples? I mean, there's so many couples now, we've met many getting married younger now, like some early 20-somethings, they're just starting out. And some of that old wisdom, I feel like, has been lost in the modern day marriage conversation about, well, what are just the simple things that in every marriage, like I'm going to, if you were marriage counseling, premarital counseling a couple right now, you would say, hey, these are the things I want you to practice on a consistent basis to make sure you're building that fortress.
Yeah. And this is going to sound like a cliche since I'm also a pastor, but I can't tell how many of the couples specifically mentioned, we got through this because we felt like we were grounded in the Lord. Yeah. It's why I tell premarital couples, I'll talk to them, what is your quiet time like? How do you connect with God? How do you get the word in your life? Not to be cynical, but half the time they go to church and, you know, occasionally. And I said, you know what? That might have worked when you were single, but you're going to face new spiritual challenges as a married couple. You've got to hear God's affirmation. You've got to hear God's restriction, encouragement and challenge. And you've got to have God fill up your heart with love so that you have love to give. And all of them that made it said that was a big factor, that God was a refuge. I, gathering verses for this book, I looked at how many verses where God is called a rock or a refuge or my fortress, all over scripture, just look in a concordance. And so say, okay, to be strong, I need to go deep in the Lord. That's the foundation. Second, I think you have to accept life is hard. This isn't a world that's neutral to your affection. It is tearing you apart. You sin, your spouse sins, your kids sin, you get sick, you get unemployed, people treat you unfairly. And often it seems like it's a particularly targeted attack. One couple, the wife admitted she married the guy because of his strength. He could, I don't know what you can bench press, Gabe, he could bench press 400 pounds. Which is about 350 pounds more than I could probably. I mean, that's a lot of weight for people that don't lift weights. That's a lot. He was diagnosed with MS 3 years after they were married, fought going into a wheelchair. He's been in a scooter now for a while. And they knew life was hard. And it'd be so easy just to feel sorry for themselves. She said, I married a guy to be strong. She's been carrying the groceries in for 30 years. She has to get him home at 8, 8:30 when she'd like to stay later at a party because she knows he just does better if he's in bed early. But here's what I love about their attitude. This is one of the things that just blew me away. He talked about how now he says, I probably have 20% of my physical capability that I had before MS really hit hard. And so he wheels himself up to the bed and he goes, I can get myself into the bed, but Stacy has to come and lift my legs and move him over. He goes, and part of me thinks, why don't I just have her do all of it? He goes, but Gary, I'm determined to do 100% of the 20% I'm capable of doing. Mm-hmm. Now, beyond marriage, this has become a new theme for me. I share it to my kids. I share everybody. Do 100% of the 20% you're able to. Another couple, he had prostate cancer. Sexual intimacy became problematic. There are times where things aren't going to happen. And it'd be so easy for a couple to say, okay, if we can't do everything, we're not going to do anything. And my counsel to them is, hey, do 100% of your 20%. Can you hold each other without clothes? Are there things that you can do or he can focus on her or whatnot? I'm just saying, don't let the fact that you can't do 100% of what you would like to do keep you from showing affection and care and love and gratitude to God.
Yeah.
Do that 20% to 100%.
Yeah, I love that perspective because you're still focused on the agency the Lord has given you, not on maybe the deficit that you feel has been taken away. I would liken that kind of illustration with like Gabe and I, even in these last 5 years of marriage. I mean, historically, I'm more vulnerable. I'm like more of a chronic oversharer, not in a way that's even normal. I think I just grew up in a house where my dad modeled like very open vulnerability, even in ways my mom didn't. And so I kind of, you know, saw that as, oh, Gabe's like this too. And we definitely would confide in one another. It was not like withholding, but it just came more natural for me. And so there was a season where Gabe thought, like, I just can't meet you where you are. I don't know how to be there with you in maybe that bearing your burden or like helping offset what that heavy thing that you're feeling right now. And so he could just go like, I'm just not an emotional guy. That's not my thing. Like, I can't be there for you for that. But instead, I think what I found in him over the last probably up to a decade for sure, but especially in the last 5 years since we adopted Joy, brought her home, there was kind of new layers of you know, just trial, quite frankly. And he just started practicing into it and did come, I think, 100% with what his 20%. And in doing that, it just opened up our ability to just really go there more consistently, more often, him even being more in tune with his emotions, him expressing vulnerability to me without me initiating. And so I feel like that connection was because he kind of harnessed, I might not be where Rebecca is on like my comfort level here, but I'm going to give everything I have right now towards that.
And I think, Gary, that's part of your point is the crisis. Like, we've experienced a few moments in our marriage where the crisis didn't sink us, but it certainly created all kinds of new challenges that we had to encounter. And those can either bring you closer together or they can be a disaster for your marriage. And I think we have found the beauty of how those moments can bring us closer, can help us learn more about each other. But you write about this too, the future beyond crisis. Like how would you describe the value a crisis can bring to a marriage to help really get things back to the basics of bare bones and help you know what you're working with and letting you know a little bit of like what we need to go work on from here?
I just, it makes me, Gabe, just so grateful that we get to be married in Christ. I don't know any other way to make a marriage work, that he just offers his forgiveness and grace, because two of the things coming out of it that point to the future for couples, one was the need to forgive. Now, let me stress, people get up, there are times when forgiveness doesn't mean the marriage continues. If there's been blatant betrayal that's unrepentant, if there's abuse, I'm not talking about situations like that, but I'm thinking of one couple where a woman really did spend them into serious trouble, and he realized, okay, our marriage if I don't forgive, I can't throw this in her face, I can't bring it back up. I've got to forgive as God has forgiven me. And so knowing how much God had forgiven him allowed him to forgive his wife, which meant not only were they able to get past it as a couple, but he felt grateful to God that Jesus had died for him. And so he experienced that anew. And then secondly, going forward, you see each other's weakness. And again, this can be dangerous, but let me carefully explain it. The need to protect each other. This is a different couple, but it was the same situation where finances were just destructive. They had been very wealthy, and COVID just about killed this man's business. They had to sell their home. They were selling down to one car and all of that. And so she was doing everything she could to protect her husband, because she said, Gary, in this culture with other men and other people, they really view a man's worth based on his financial situation. And he'd been known as the guy who could always pick up the check, literally pay for missionaries' kids' college education. And she didn't want people to know how bad it was. So I'm saying protection, I'm not saying protecting a husband who's misbehaving, breaking the law, or doing abuse. I'm talking about protecting a husband who's had a hit. And the wife is saying, I care for you. I'm not going to shame you. I'm not going to let others look down. And it just brought tears to my eyes at a woman saying, this wasn't his fault. He's fighting so gallantly, and I want others to be as proud of him as I am. And it's those stories where they're coming out of it with a new relationship. Forgiveness and grace marks who they are. A determination not to blame each other, but to protect each other. And so their marriage has grown closer, and they wouldn't go back. They all say without fail, we wish we had never gone through this, but we're glad we have the marriage we have now that we didn't have before this challenge happened. That's the miracle.
What I hear you describing is honor. I know that sometimes in marriages, we can be quick to complain about maybe something where our spouse is lacking. That can be the temptation for me in, you know, those earlier years to just kind of point out what I felt was ill-equipped or, you know, where the lack was. But I think what the Lord's convicted me more of in these later years is just to really honor what I see in Gabe and just like what a father he is, what a man of integrity he is. And I think I thought those things, but I don't know how much I would verbalize them. And I knew words of affirmation was like a love language, but it is for most men, quite frankly. But just speaking life over our spouse, I have found that it just comes much more naturally now to like practice that like just verbally going like, when you do this, like, thank you. And I may have taken it for granted. And part of, I think, what did catalyze that for us as well was some seasons of suffering, some seasons of just us not being on the same page and me being quick to point those things out, but then also being so quick to now praise God for what he's done. And it points back to what you were saying earlier about like that our covenant is to Christ in this marriage too. And I agree with you. It's there is all always going to be some version of temptation to kind of run the other way in our humanness, in our fallenness, in our, you know, kind of just looking for the easy way out because we feel, and this is not to shame or condemn, but we feel like this is unrecoverable. Maybe that gap has widened far enough that we don't know each other anymore. We're two different people. But the truth is we've been counseled consistently, like the person you fell in love with is still in there. Their gifts and personality and their natural bent didn't disappear. It's just that pain layered on top of that. And that pain slowly made that drift happen. And so it's that willingness to have for us, and this is the encouragement to everyone listening, is to read books like this, to get in therapy, like to pursue one another with the intention of going, I want to know you more. And in doing that, it's going to help me discover like where the root of this is.
Yeah, I think for a lot of newly married couples, there's that temptation that if we get it all right the first few years, forever, our marriage will be great versus understanding this daily rhythm that's required for connection, for vulnerability, for encouragement, for time with God, but also in the relationship to grow. That is the only thing that you can count on. I mean, as you continue on in the years, in your experience, as we come to a close, for couples listening right now, and they're like, I want to build a better fortress. I understand time with God is going to be important, connection with my spouse. Anything else practical that you would say you've seen in the stories and the counseling that you've done that are consistent rhythms for couples that do have the strength, that are able to last and stand against the storms that are going to come?
Your spouse will be exposed if you're married for any period of time. It's, we all stumble in many ways, James 3:2. How you respond when that exposure happens will have such a huge moment for the future of your relationship. There's a woman who had an eating disorder when she was younger. She had been sexually abused. She had dealt with those issues. She had talked about it with her future husband, but some months into the marriage, now she's sexually active. Before, she'd kind of dealt with the abuse by just not ever thinking about sex. Well, you can't do that when you're married. She had changed occupations. Finances were a trouble. All of these pressures gathered together. And instead of, she told her husband she was going to go into the bathroom to freshen up, but instead she went into the kitchen, opened up the refrigerator, and if it was edible, she's shoving it into her mouth. And her husband saw her. And now she thought, okay, the honeymoon's over. He's heard about it, but to see it with literally with noodles hanging between, and the way he handled it was so amazingly beautiful. He smiled. And he went and he opened up a drawer. He got out two forks. He says, honey, you don't have to do this alone anymore. We're married. Okay, that set a course for the rest of their marriage. Now, I'm not suggesting if you catch your spouse gambling online that you say, well, here's my half of the mortgage. there's certain issues where you have to apply this judiciously. But when you see your spouse in their weakness, like the woman whose husband had MS, not shaming him. Why do I have to carry in the groceries? But you see that vulnerability and you're saying, I will protect you. I'm here for you. We're going to grow together. Dr. Joyce Scarca did an incredible doctoral dissertation about sexual shame in women. And she alerted me to this because often women think that sexual shame is an issue that men face, not women. And she said, really, what helped how healing marriage could be when a woman could share it. One, that the husband, there's active listening. There's not immediate rejection. And the third thing is we're in this together. I'm not going to ask you to fight this alone. I'm going to be here with you. And she said, when the husband responded that way, you had a whole new marriage and a whole new person. And so that vulnerability will be exposed. My wife has made people laugh. I was so active in college ministry and was a pretty zealous believer when we got married. And she told people, I thought when I married Gary, he was the one guy who didn't mess up. And she goes, not long after we got married, I thought, well, he really does. And I'm just saying, you know, you're going to see that. How you respond to that, is it with the grace that God has shown you? Is it the, we're in this together? Is it, why do I have to put up with this? Or I was born to help you with that. Proverbs 17:17, a brother is born for adversity. That will determine the course of your marriage, the joy of your marriage, the happiness of your marriage, and the strength of your marriage.
Thank you. Oh, that's so good. And I think that just is embodies that unconditional love that God gives us, our ability to meet each other exactly where we are, accept and love each other exactly where we are. Thank you, Gary, for going there in all the topics and all the different areas that people would shy away from and maybe feel so buried in shame, especially in their marriages and the most intimate relationships that are in front of them. But we know that when we are met with that unconditional love by our spouse, that grace. I can remember several very poignant conversations Gabe and I have had throughout the years where he had met me right where I was and I felt completely loved in that moment, that forges what you're saying, a fortified faith, a fortified marriage. So thank you for your work. Thank you for all that you've done, especially in marriages. Thank you for this book.
I want to recommend it in making your marriage a fortress. Everybody listening, we'd love for you to engage this book this summer. It's a great way for you to have this conversation, go a lot deeper. Gary tells amazing stories like you've already heard today of just the ways couples have really worked through the crisis. We're all going to face a crisis at some point. And how can we be better prepared? And then how can we walk through it? And then how can we come out of it stronger? So Gary, thank you again for your work. Thank you for being a part of this.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was a good conversation again on this topic of strengthening our marriages. I'm so glad that was the final one, because I think as we've talked to so many other guests throughout this season, we've been encouraged, we've laughed a lot, we've learned a lot about the ways in which we can be strategic. But I think this really puts the period on the conversation that you're going to be faced with challenges as we move on from here that none of us even know in the year ahead, in the week ahead, in the month ahead. And we hope that this 10-week series is been and will continue to be a part of what helps strengthen you for what may come.
Right. I hope it has encouraged you. And ending with building a marriage as a fortress is the point, right? That we have something that we have built, we have worked on, we have invested in. And those of you who have stuck with us every week, you are doing the work. So we're so proud of you and grateful to be a part of the encouragement of your weekly rhythm. And don't forget to enter our giveaway for the retreat at Lost Valley in October. Just go to RebeccaLyons.com/giveaway and give us your information there. We will announce the winner next Wednesday, August 17th.